WBAI New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 a.m. in New York City and time for Back of the Book. Not going away. Stay right there.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It's 5 o'clock or so in the morning, and you're listening to all, oh, these depressingly early sunsets are happening. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things on this program. You can find out a little bit more about what we're talking about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame in the left side of your screen. And at the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that. You'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. This is our 116th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. So if things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story in the multiverse for this week is, we're holding at 121 followers on Twitter. Yes, Twitter is getting very weird. And again, I'm hoping the reason we're losing a whole bunch of people, well, what have we've lost three people over the past 2 or 3 weeks, is that people are just bailing on Elon Musk or Leon Scum's Twitter because he's letting all sorts of stuff go in here. There are bots showing up and all sorts of hate speech and nastiness. I don't see a lot of that because I don't post a lot there. What I post is, here's the radio program. That's about it. Very little more than that. And I don't follow very many people. I follow some folks at BAI. I follow BAI. And a little bit more, and that's about it. So I'm in like a tiny little section of Twitter. So I don't see a lot of this really insane junk that goes on. But 121 followers, which, even though it's less, is still a huge number that makes the headline. The WBAI local station board is going to meet on December 7th, 2022, but that will be an executive session, so you won't be able to hear it. Lucky you. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, December 14th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And we should have officer elections at that meeting. Oh, always a big thrilling thing. Yes, thrills, thrills, thrills. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 644,620,422 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,639,588. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 98,937,121, and the death toll in America was 1,081,285. So, 2,103 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program, which is a couple of hundred less than the previous weekly toll. The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations, so we should have maximum immunity against the currently dominant variants. They keep popping up. We're really in the season now where a surge is possible with people meeting indoors for hours at a time and so many people saying, oh, the pandemic, that was a long time ago. It's long time over. Not. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. We have an announcement here on the program. As we record, it is somebody's birthday. Of course, as you hear this program, this is yesterday. So yesterday was Pickles of the North's birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
And of course, we have a tradition. And here are some other people who are going to wish Pickles of the North a merry birthday. some number of programs ago, we started talking about black holes, and there's been a lot of research done on them again lately. There's been research getting done on them since 1915 or some damn thing. And we have been talking about the latest research. One of the things that's been found is that there are, in fact, dormant black holes. And a dormant black hole, well, first of all, a black hole. A black hole is, of course, something that is extremely dense. Usually, generally, what happens is that a star will go supernova. If the star is of the right size, when it explodes, it blows off the outer parts of it, but the inner parts of it get crushed down. For instance, why is it that we can have fissionable material and fusion happening, where, for instance, in the sun, you have hydrogen nuclei, just a proton, through various different means? There's really two different ways it happens in a star like the sun. But you have these nuclei coming together. Now, they should repel each other, but they come together because there's so much energy around them. And without getting into too much detail, you suddenly get the two hydrogen nuclei becoming a helium nucleus. And so, gee, things go together like that. And if you get those things together, they release a great deal of energy, which is why you have the energy from the sun and why you have a hydrogen bomb. You have a hydrogen bomb, don't you? Doesn't everybody? And anyway, so you would wonder, gee whiz, how come when I sit down in a chair, my ass is not a thermonuclear device? And the reason is because the ordinary atoms that we're made of have electron shells around them. And the electrons, of course, are all negatively charged, and they repel each other. So when you sit down on a chair, the outer part of the chair is all electrons. And the outer part of your rear end is also all electrons. So when you sit down, what happens is the electrons in your rear end and the electrons in the chair repel each other. So you kind of float on things. We never really, in a way, contact anything. And this doesn't just go for sitting down. We never really contact anything, you could say. We always are floating above everything because the electrons just repel each other. And what happens in a star that's going supernova, which is where there are a couple of different kinds of supernova, but we're mostly going to talk about type 2 supernovas, which when they happen, it's a big star. You have to have a big star. And what goes on with it is it makes all sorts of elements. And every time it makes elements, it makes more energy. And so you start out with fusing hydrogen into helium. Then you start fusing helium, and it keeps going, and it goes and goes through the part of the periodic table. Not the whole periodic table, because some elements are only made after some other elements decay radioactively. But it keeps going, it keeps going. Then it gets to iron. When it gets to iron, things change. And instead of the fusion that makes iron releasing a lot of energy, it absorbs energy. Now, all of a sudden, a lot of energy just disappears and turns into iron. And what happens is you've got this enormous weight, because these are stars that are bigger than the sun, significantly bigger than the sun, and you've got this gigantic amount of weight on this star, and all what keeps the star from collapsing is the fields. The fields, that there are electrons and protons and entire atomic nuclei that are bigger than hydrogen or helium. And they all have their electric charges and they keep each other from going. And, well, there's a degeneracy that happens. It collapses. The central core of the star has the entire weight, almost the entire weight of the star, crushing in on it. And it's enough to overcome those electromagnetic forces of the electrons and protons and all of that. And it crushes down enough that it becomes, you create a black hole. Well, in most supernovae, what happens is you end up with some sort of a core at the end of it, and most of the supernova is blown out, and you may end up with something on the order of a white dwarf star or something like that. And what can or a neutron star, which is another thing where the everything is crushed down, but the neutrons are there. And even though they don't have an electric charge, they still are there, and they won't allow themselves to be just crushed. They still keep themselves going. In some cases, you have what is called neutron degeneracy, and that will crush them down, and that can make a black hole or a big explosion. And in other stars, all of a sudden when the supernova happens, the central core gets crushed down beyond neutron degeneracy, and you get the black hole where, when it gets to a certain density, it just collapses completely. Theoretically, all of the matter becomes a point, a geometric point, which means it's dimensionless, which in reality is like really mind-blowing. It's got all this stuff, and it could be multiple stellar masses contained in something that is either has no dimension or is smaller than a proton, which is like really tiny. And so you have a black hole that gets created. And what seems to usually happen is, one, you've got what's called the singularity, which is the black hole at the center with unbelievable amount of gravity. And because the gravity is so tremendous in a black hole, even light can't escape from the black hole. The speed of light is too slow to escape from the black hole. And so you get what's called an event horizon around it, which is an area where everything is controlled by the black hole. Generally, it's considered by some to be out of the universe. You got the universe, you got this black hole, and beyond the event horizon is out of the universe. So it goes in there, and this event horizon, well, that's what makes it get called a black hole. Because if you could look at one, just an event horizon, it would be black. Wouldn't have anything you could really see. It would be black. If there's anything in the background, it would blot it out. What really happens generally, however, is there's stuff around. And so the stuff ends up getting drawn toward the black hole. And because of the conservation of angular momentum, when things come in, they're not necessarily perfectly aimed exactly at the center of the black hole. So they kind of miss a little bit, but they're captured. And they start to orbit the black hole. If you get enough stuff orbiting the black hole, and again, this part is outside the event horizon, you get what's called an accretion disk, where all this stuff is falling in. And what happens is the stuff is under tremendous force, and it collides. You've got things coming from every direction, and they collide. All the atoms and, you know, whatever else is in there, and alien spaceships, whatever, it all collides, and it's getting churned up in this accretion disk, and the accretion disk emits energy. It lights up, and that's how we've been able to actually see where some black holes are. Now, in the centers of galaxies, you get supermassive black holes, which can be millions or billions of times the mass of the sun. Yeah, you can see those things, all right. They got entire galaxies arrayed around them. One of the things, however, that's been discovered recently is that there are indeed dormant black holes. Now, these are black holes that are not doing what's called feeding, which is that thing where it has formed its event horizon, but there's no accretion disk. So without an accretion disk, you can't really see anything associated with it because the event horizon is, of course, black and it's invisible. Also, they're not big. Some of these black holes, it's estimated they have an event horizon that's about 32 miles in diameter. Well, if you're on the Earth and you're looking around with a really good telescope, there's no way in hell you're going to see anything that's 32 miles in diameter unless it's very close. I mean, we can see asteroids that are 32 miles in diameter. Beyond that, you're not going to see anything that's 32 miles in diameter very easily. And so I've said before, gee whiz, this could be a problem someday because you could get a dormant black hole entering into the solar system and that would play hell with the solar system. What would go on then is that the black hole would show up in our neighborhood in space. And actually, it turns out now that dormant black holes may not be all that uncommon. And if a dormant black hole showed up, we wouldn't be able to see it. It would be pretty much undetectable if it were alone. And now, the way they have detected them is because they have companion stars. And there's a star, and the star is moving in a certain way because the black hole and the star, they're orbiting each other. They have a common center that they orbit. And you can see the star moving around, but there's nothing visible near it. And it is concluded that such a star has a black hole companion. Now, in some cases, this is very prominent because the black hole starts stealing the surface material off the star and starts feeding, as it's called, and it develops an accretion disk pretty rapidly that way. But there are these dormant black holes that do have companion stars, and they're not feeding off them because they're too far away. It's just not happening. So if a dormant black hole came in, and it would come in from interstellar space. This would be just like that thing, Oumuamua, that came in a few years ago, and it was another asteroid that was definitely interstellar that came in, and Oumuamua was some thousands of meters long, I think. In all likelihood, well, I mean, somebody was saying, yeah, it was an astrophysicist who likes to say silly things, who was saying, it's a spaceship from beyond the solar system. Well, no, it's probably not that. It's probably a rubble pile. A number of asteroids that have been observed are considered to be rubble piles, which means they're not like a big solid rock with some crap on the top of it. They're all crap. They're just a bunch of rubble. Like on Earth, you would have a gravel pit and you'd have a bunch of gravel. It's sort of like that. They're not really united, just that over the eons, their gravity, which is really weak, has put them together and they're just all moving through space together. But if you tried to like land a spaceship on it, you would not have anything to really land on. You would just go through it because it's, again, just a bunch of stuff and there's nothing solid that's bigger than like a rock the size of your hand. So that's what Oumuamua and that other asteroid from interstellar space were. Oumuamua, definitely that. The other asteroid might have been more rocky. But we have these two things that came into the solar system. And they weren't detected right away. Oumuamua, again, was something like 1,000 yards long. And it was not detected until it was well past the Earth and leaving the solar system. So, yeah, stuff can come in and we can miss it even if it's visible. And a black hole without an accretion disk would really come flying in and we'd never see it coming. And there would be nothing done to deflect it if it posed a danger. And what could happen is, a lot would depend on its velocity relative to the solar system. If it were a black hole that sort of skirted the edge of the solar system, by which I mean the Oort cloud, which is like, what if it passes like a light year away? Probably in that case, it would disrupt the Oort cloud, maybe the Kuiper belt a bit. The Oort cloud is a bunch of icy and rocky bits that are way the hell out from the center of the solar system. And we would end up with comets and things flying into the inner solar system as the stuff that's on the outside got disturbed. The odds are it would then pass on and wouldn't pose much of a danger to us. It certainly wouldn't pose a danger to us right away. The comets and little bits of chunks of ice and matter that it would scare into the inner solar system, that could be a problem, but it would probably take thousands of years, maybe millions. But what could happen also is, if it came closer to the inner solar system, what could happen is, if it's a nice big black hole, it could start gravitationally interacting with the sun. It and the sun could become a binary. Remember I said some of those dormant black holes have a binary system? They have a star there with? Well, if a dormant black hole came close enough to the solar system, it and the sun would form one of those binaries. This would cause a problem because the solar system's planets are all centered around, revolving around the sun. And now we have this other big mass of gravity. Oh boy, things would start getting moved around. Typically what happens in a situation like that, and this is mathematically shown, and there's some evidence of this kind of thing, some of the planets start getting thrown out. They get ejected from the solar system. And this has been shown to happen, and there are rogue planets, as they're called, that are not associated with any kind of star. And there are rogue planets moving through the galaxy. That's another thing to say, hey, we'd never see one of those things coming if it came in the right direction. They don't have any radiation. It would just be that, and it would be out in interstellar space, so it would be frozen, and it would just be coming into the solar system, and a planet showing up in the solar system could also disrupt things. It doesn't have to, like, smash into the Earth. It could just start moving around and throwing asteroids around and making the orbits of the planets, including the Earth, change. You know, there's that Twilight Zone episode that starts out, if you haven't seen this Twilight Zone episode, sorry, I'm going to spoil it for you. There starts out, this woman is painting a giant sun in the sky, and they screw it up in the Twilight Zone because they have it being daylight all the time because we're closer to the sun. Well, why isn't the Earth still rotating? You know, they screwed that up. But anyway, so the Earth is, in the start of this Twilight episode, getting closer to the sun, and it's hot and nobody can stand it. People are moving to the far north to get away from it. And then in the end, she wakes up from her sleep, and it turns out the opposite is happening. The Earth has been thrown out of its orbit, and it's traveling away from the sun in the solar system. Well, that sort of thing could happen if either a dormant black hole, or a large enough planet were to come into the solar system. And either one of those things could happen, and neither one of those things would be easily seen. Now, these days, we have things like the Hubble Space Telescope, We have lots of radio telescopes, many ground-based optical telescopes that are really very fine. And we now have the Next Generation Space Telescope, which is unfortunately named after a homophobe. And that would also be able to detect some of these things at a pretty good distance. Still couldn't do anything about them, but they could detect it. And anyway, so you could have either a rogue planet or a dormant black hole come into the solar system, and we wouldn't see it for quite a while, but it would certainly make itself felt. And especially with a dormant black hole, which is going to be really heavy, you're going to have things just swirling around. And the dormant black hole would not have to collide with the Earth, like smack into it. It would just have gravitational effects, and it might swing the Earth around. The Earth could be swung closely into the sun, or it could be flung way out in the solar system. We could end up in the same orbit as the planet Jupiter. And maybe we'd end up becoming a moon of Jupiter. Well, we'd be freezing then, because out by Jupiter, things like methane become solid. So, you know, methane's a gas here. Well, out by Jupiter, it's a solid, and all the water would freeze. Yeah, it would be bad. This could happen, but it's very unlikely. But it could happen, and I'll point out that Pickles of the North and our saddle pal, Uncle Sidney Smith, we have the Inconstant Moon Protocols. There was a science fiction short story some years ago, and Jim Freund read this on the air once. And it's a story where a scientist notices that the full moon is looking a little weird and changing colors. And he's saying, what could that be? Why would that? And then he realizes there's a monstrous coronal mass ejection coming out of the sun. A big chunk of sun has blown out. And this happens. This is a real thing. That can happen. And he says, uh-oh. And so he starts racing around to do things because he knows that the Earth is going to get hit with a big bad thing very soon. And our Inconstant Moon Protocols consist of, we're going to get together, the three of us, the second we find out that the Earth is going to get blasted. And we start having chocolate milkshakes and eating everything we want and drinking whatever we want and having fun, because it doesn't matter if you have diabetes. Diabetes is going to take longer to kill you than whatever the hell is going to happen is going to take to kill you.
Well, how long would things last if we were tossed out of our orbit and, say, out to where the gas giants are?
Well, we wouldn't last long enough to get out there. Humanity would be gone. It depends on how fast we're moving. What happens if could it possibly be seconds? That would be very, very hard to have happen. That would require a black hole of pretty considerable size, pretty considerable weight. The actual black hole is teeny weeny. And that would require a pretty massive black hole. I don't think it could send us out there in seconds. No, seconds would be faster than the speed of light. So that ain't going to happen. But it could whip us out there at many thousands of miles an hour. For instance, right now, if you're listening to us, where you are, the room you're in, is moving east at about 785 miles an hour because of the rotation of the Earth. Meanwhile, the Earth is going around the sun. The orbital speed of the Earth is about 66,000 miles an hour. That's really damn fast. Well, something like that could possibly be the speed. It could be that the Earth would start moving at a slow speed and take centuries to even get noticeably far away from the sun, or it could end up with, decades going out there. But when we pass a certain distance and we're out of our Goldilocks zone of the sun, which is where you have liquid water and all of that, yeah, it's going to be bad.
So we'd have time to contemplate our fate.
Well, yeah, maybe we would. On the other hand, see, there's also this. It could get close enough, a dormant black hole could get close enough that it could start taking away the atmosphere. And that would be kind of a rapid way to die. Because once the atmosphere starts going away, you're not breathing much of anything. And it doesn't have to all go away. Aircraft require oxygen if you're above 12,000 feet. And if you were to suddenly go to 12,000 feet yourself, you would notice that you're having a little trouble breathing because the air is so thin. And if you're going to go climb Mount Everest, you have to use oxygen, because if you've been living at or near sea level, you're going to get up there and you're not going to have enough oxygen to breathe and it can kill you. So we wouldn't have to have all the atmosphere torn away. We would just have to have enough of it torn away to thin it out. So that, I suppose, Sherpas, the people who live in the Himalayan mountains and who have adapted over the eons to that environment, they would have to come down to sea level to be able to breathe, and the rest of us would just die. So, yeah, our inconstant moon protocols would have to, you know, be reasonably swift. We couldn't really lollygag about, but we'd do that. But anyway, so we can have a situation where a dormant black hole could come in here and we couldn't do anything about it. And gee whiz, it would be a big disaster. But one of the things that's happening is there's been new research. And again, I am not pleased with the new research. And the new research is basically saying the bit bucket is gone. The new research is saying that information cannot be destroyed. Information is indestructible. Well, I don't like that. I've thought for a long time that information can be destroyed. But now we have these new things coming up. And I've been very bothered about this because this goes against what I want to believe. Scientific American did a big piece on this in September. One of the articles by a George Musser, who has written books on this subject, notes that a basic thing in physics is time could go backwards. The arrow of time we're used to, everything goes into the future. Theoretically or hypothetically, things could go into the past. Okay, you could have the arrow of time going the other way. This is, you know, not a, in my opinion, real world thing. And basically, he says, the information required to wind back the clock is always preserved. And this is one of the things that a lot of physicists are really hot about. And one of the things that's disturbed them is that a black hole does not seem to preserve information. And they're bothered about that. They say it's a paradox, because how could reversible laws have irreversible effects? And, you know, scientists are looking for a grand unified theory of nature. And he says here in Scientific American, the information paradox is their most specific motivation, and it has guided their way when they have had little else to go on, unquote. And the basic deal here is Stephen Hawking, you'll remember him, he was the brilliant geophysicist in a wheelchair, he found a way for black holes to evaporate over time. And the way that works is, you have in you, all around you, the energy of the universe, the energy of the vacuum. Where there is nothing, there is energy. And this is happening all around you, inside the atoms inside you, inside the protons and neutrons inside you. What happens is there's so much energy that, you know, you have E equals MC squared, where the energy and mass are equivalent. Which is why you get like 1 gram of matter and you turn it into a 20,000 kiloton atomic bomb. And that's where the energy is. You have that matter-energy equivalency. And so from all of that energy, suddenly matter pops out. But how it pops out is because charge has to be conserved. Usually what happens is you get an electron and a positron popping out of nothing, but they're right next to each other, and one's positive, one's negative, and so they smash into each other and annihilate and become energy again. This is happening constantly throughout everything that's going on. It's called the quantum foam. And so this is going on all the time. Well, it also happens at the very edge of the event horizon of a black hole. And what can happen is, this isn't observed, this is theoretical. And Hawking said what can happen is that the energy suddenly pops an electron and a positron into being. One of those is outside the event horizon. The other one is inside the event horizon. Well, the one inside the event horizon is gone. It's going in. The one outside the event horizon is going to escape. And by doing that, and again, matter and energy are equivalent, the black hole actually loses a little bit of the energy, which means a little bit of mass. Over gazillions of years, a black hole can evaporate that way. And a lot of these scientists are very bothered because if that can happen, then that means information is destroyed. You can never get it back. And, oh boy, a lot of people viewed this as a full-fledged crisis for physics. And, oh man, they were very, very bothered about this stuff. And there's new research which is talking about the quantum entanglement of those two little pieces, like the electron and the positron are quantum entangled. I think we have to put the rest of this off to the next program, but the deal is, they say, because of that, the information is not destroyed. I don't buy it, but they do, and we're going to talk about that on the next program. I mentioned at the top of the program, we're having the earliest sunsets of the year now. The sun set on Friday at 4:28 in the afternoon. By about 5:30, it's as dark as midnight. We'll be having these earliest sunsets until December 13th. Almost 2 weeks of this. It is so depressing, but oh, here we go. This is why people do all these festive things near the solstice. And you can make yourself feel better. You can, you know, just try to feel better with the bright lights and the shiny stuff. Forget about all of the, you know, superstitious frou-frou that goes on with it. Just enjoy the bright lights and the festivity stuff and try to let that help you get through these times of excessive darkness. And Pickles of the North has been telling us about the progress of the Orion spacecraft and the Artemis 1 project, and it's in a new phase now. Tell us about it, my dear.
Yes, well, as of December 2nd, the Orion spacecraft was 229,812 miles from Earth and 50,516 miles from the Moon. And there's a beautiful picture that you can see. It's been doing a lot of experiments. One of them involves the hybrid electronic radiation assessor, which they really need, also called Hera, Queen of the Gods, the Greek gods. And they're looking at what is the radiation effect going to be on human beings. Of course, that's a big, big part of this mission. There will be live coverage of Orion's return flyby of the moon, and that coverage begins on Monday, December 5th, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You just have to go to NASA.gov, and you can see it on NASA TV there. And Orion will use the moon's gravity to slingshot it into its return path to the Earth, and I believe splashdown should be on December 11th. Quite exciting. And again, if you want to see very cool, you can see live footage, if the broadband is available for them to pick it up, the craft on its return right now to the Earth, or you can see really cool pictures. And there's one especially of the moon and the Earth, and it's really amazing. Go up to NASA's website and look at that stuff.
All right. Thank you, birthday lady. More information has come out about that little din-din that Donnie Bonespur Trump had with that other moron, Kanye West, at his Mar-a-Lago joint. Kanye West brought along another moron, this Nick Fuentes creep. How stupid is Kanye West? Doesn't he understand what a white supremacist is? Nick Fuentes is a white supremacist. Kanye West said on social media that Trump was, quote, really impressed, unquote, by Fuentes, who has suggested, and Fuentes has suggested, that the government, quote, just send the military in, do what must be done. Send the military into these black neighborhoods. They're never going to vote for us, unquote. This is the guy that Kanye West is bringing around. Trump was not pleased at being tagged with Fuentes, although he did invite West. Trump is claiming Kanye West showed up with other people whom Trump hasn't known about. Really? The Secret Service let them in without having looked at them? Nobody knew about this, right? Sure, he has no security, right? God, what a liar Trump is. Trump is now saying that Kanye West tried to sabotage him by bringing undeniable anti-Semite Nick Fuentes to the Trump Florida estate for dinner last week. And then West made that visit public. Oh, what a surprise. After Kanye West said weeks ago that he was going to go, quote, Death Con 3 on Jewish people, unquote. I think it's one of those cases where he hasn't read DEF CON, D-E-F-C-O-N, and he doesn't have any idea what he's talking about, so he thinks the word is death, D-E-A-T-H, another semi-literate idiot. Anyway, after he said that, Leon Scum, a.k.a. Elon Musk, let him back on Twitter. Well, that didn't last long. This week, Kanye West posted a graphic that was too much even for Leon Scum, and he's once again banned from Twitter for promoting violence. The CEO of the Anti-Defamation League has called Kanye West, quote, a vicious anti-Semite, unquote, for his recent comments and behavior. West has been blabbing on various right-wing media outlets and is now quoted as having said on another moron's podcast, Alex Jones, saying, quote, I'm not trying to be shocking. I like Hitler, unquote. Jones actually had to start trying to distance himself from some of these crazy remarks. On this Alex Jones program, Kanye West said of the Nazis, quote, they did good things too. We've got to stop dissing the Nazis all the time, unquote. Oh, man. Hey, he's running for president. And he went on to say, quote, there's a lot of things that I love about Hitler. A lot of things, unquote. And of course, Kanye West has announced that he, as well as Trump, is running for president in 2024. He's apparently added this Nick Fuentes character to his election team. You know, if somebody had written a comedy routine with all of this years ago, nobody would have considered it plausible enough to be funny. Really, this... the guy says he's a self-avowed white supremacist, so you want to promote him, huh? And what would Hitler think about black people? Well, we actually know what... Okay. Meanwhile, speaking of Donnie Bonespur Trump, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta has shot down that special master that Trump had wanted appointed to run interference and against the Justice Department's investigation of his playing games with all of that top secret stuff he'd stolen from the White House. The appellate judges wrote, quote, "The law is clear. We cannot write a rule that allows any subject of a search warrant to block government investigations after the execution of the warrant. Nor can we write a rule that allows only former presidents to do so," unquote. Two of the three judges had been appointed by Trump, and the other had been appointed by the first President Bush. All Republicans. Trump's pet judge in Florida, Eileen Cannon, had done what Trump wanted her to do. The federal appeals court wrote in its decision, quote, "The district court improperly exercised equitable jurisdiction in this case. For that reason, we vacate the September 5th order on appeal and remand with instructions for the district court to dismiss the underlying civil action," unquote. So Trump's little game of trying to get out of things by having it all sequestered is shot to hell. He was having a hard time anyway. The special master was saying, "Oh no, you don't get to play those games, Bonespur." Oh, here it comes. Here comes the Pitching Express. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York. And we are listener-sponsored. We don't have commercials for selling used cars. We don't have commercials for selling, well, other stuff either. We have to beg you, the listeners, to support us. That's what we do. We beg. And 1-212-209-2950 is the number we ask you to call. This is an attempt to get you to become a donor. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. That would really help out a whole lot. By calling in that number and becoming a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, or making a one-time donation in the name of Back of the Book, you tell management that we do have listeners. George and Bonnie and Michael and Dorothy and earlier Tony, they have all told management there are listeners to Back of the Book. And we did science stuff this time. You're not going to hear that anywhere else. We talk about Trump in ways that you don't hear about in other places. And we are critical of general morons. So 1-212-209-2950. You would not only be supporting Back of the Book, you would be telling management that the overnight radio programs do have listeners. Because again, I keep telling you this, and this is real. They keep bringing this up. Hey, from midnight to 6 a.m., rent out the signal to some other damn thing. And who knows what it would be, but you wouldn't get the BAI overnight radio programs. Think of all those overnight radio programs. That's one quarter of WBAI's programming is the overnight. And that would all disappear if they have to go and rent out that time. We need to survive. We need to show that there are listeners to these overnight programs and listeners to Back of the Book and listeners to WBAI, period. You can help. You can help by calling 1-212-209-2950. We seriously need to hear from you. Please call 1-212-209-2950 and become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book now, and we'll thank you if you have. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. We hope we're back here next week. Coming up next is...
debuting in its new time slot, Ecologic.
Yes, and Ken Gale is on that program, and Ken Gale used to do a program called Nuff Said about comic books. He used to be our lead-in many years ago when we had another time slot, and now we're his lead-in. But he's doing Ecologic now, and it's coming up next. It's going to be following us, so give a listen to that. Okay, this time that's depressing, these early sunsets... so try to buck up, get what support you can from all the lights and the festivities and stuff. You don't have to believe in the crap. Meanwhile, remember what that fighting his depression Dormouse said.
Winding your way down on Baker Street, lighting your head and
I'm in the middle of a social experiment to see whether it's possible to live in Manhattan and never leave my apartment.
One of the founders at WBAI of Freeform Radio, Larry Josephson, a Peabody Award-winning radio producer, pioneering Freeform Radio host, and a dad, Larry the J. He never planned to be a morning radio sensation.
I became kind of against the morning, and also against all the other morning men at the time. They were all treacle, you know, hi-ho. At 5 a.m, they were happy and energetic, and I wasn't. I was often depressed or tired.
But he was a sensation.
It started to attract more and more people, all by word of mouth. And at some point, maybe in the first year, all kinds of many members of the intelligentsia, the culture vultures, the arts mavens, started listening to my show, and they would call in, and it became a hit.
Join us Sunday, December 4th at 1 p.m. at Symphony Space for a memorial celebration of the late, great Larry Josephson. You'll need to mask up. Symphony Space is at 95th Street and Broadway in Manhattan, or you can listen on the radio station where Larry first did his radio programs on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming also at WBAI.org. That's December 4th at 1 p.m. Symphony Space, or right here on your radio station.
Breathe.
David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to you stopping by. I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
I believe that we have got to mobilize a larger movement to reclaim the democracy.
Radio broadcaster Bob Law.
Some of y'all have underestimated the value and the appeal of white supremacy. And you have no idea how strong white privilege and white supremacy is.
Tune in to From the Streets with Bob Law, which gives voice to a wide range of black and progressive political and cultural perspectives. That's 11 to noon Saturdays, here over listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI.